There are seismic changes happening right now in healthcare, and I fully believe that many aspects of occupational therapy will be completely transformed over the course of our careers. And honestly, this level of change that we are experiencing is just kind of hard to wrap your mind around. But today, we are talking about two interrelated topics that have really given me language to describe some of these seismic shifts that we are seeing. These two topics are e-health and participatory medicine. And ever since I read my first journal article about them, I feel like I see them everywhere that I look in medicine. So I am so excited to unpack these topics with you today. Welcome to the OT Potential Podcast, where we dive deep into research and pull out actionable takeaways that you can implement in your practice starting today. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Lyon, OTRL. And before we dive into this week's topic, I wanted to let you know that this podcast may qualify as continuing education credits for you. Now, obviously, you are listening to this podcast on a free podcast platform, but to gain CEU credit, you will need to be a member of the OT Potential Club, our OT evidence-based practice platform. At the end of this episode, I will give you more details on how you can sign in or sign up to take a test and generate a certificate to gain your continuing education credits. But keeping in mind that this may serve as a course for some people, I wanted to explicitly state our three learning objectives so you can be thinking about them throughout the podcast today. Our first learning objective is that you will be able to identify how e-health has influenced relationships between patients and healthcare providers. Our second learning objective is that you will be able to define participatory medicine and explain its importance. And our third learning objective is that you will be able to identify opportunities to enable your patients to participate as active partners in their care. To meet these three objectives, I'm first going to walk through the journal article that introduced me to these topics. Then I'm going to bring on our OT and rehab technology expert, Lauren Sheehan, to unpack and apply what we learn. So let's start by diving into the research. The article that we're looking at today is called E-Health, Participatory Medicine, and Ethical Care, a focus group study of patients and healthcare providers' use of health-related internet information. This article comes to us from the Journal of Medical Internet Research. It was published in 2015, and it is ranked 72nd on our list of the 100 most influential OT-related journal articles. Now, I first read this article and shared it in the OT Potential Club last spring. And probably more than any other article that we've looked at, I have found it to be one that I consistently reference back to. Because I think the authors did such a good job describing these kind of big picture topics that are really an undercurrent of so much of the research that we're looking at. Like I just said, the article was published in 2015, which was a time when more and more patients were beginning to access health-related information online. This change in patients' behavior began to shift the traditional relationships they had with their healthcare providers. And the researchers found that the introduction of new technologies were really enabling patients to be much more active in their care than they had been historically, and that this was making the patient healthcare provider relationship more complex and more nuanced. And for both parties to thrive in this new dynamic, they almost had to operate from a new set of values, such as trust and vulnerability, that honestly is pretty different than how the healthcare relationship traditionally has been. And even though this was published in 2015, the findings in this research and this changing dynamic that they're describing feels even more relevant to me today, as the coronavirus has led to this exponential increase in the use of e-health options. And it has accelerated changes in healthcare to a degree that we never thought possible. So let's start with just a brief orientation to e-health and participatory medicine. When I first read this title, the terms definitely felt new to me, but I promise that these are concepts that you are definitely familiar with, even if the wording might be new. So let's start with e-health. E-health is a very broad concept that is used to describe the use of information and communication technologies in health and health-related fields. This could literally range from just Googling a diagnosis to telehealth. But this paper focuses on a specific subset of e-health, which is accessing health-related internet information. This is basically when patients and healthcare providers turn to the internet for health information. And this relatively new access to this large shared resource of health-related information on the internet has really sped the creation of something called participatory medicine, which was one of those other terms that we heard in the title of this article. And participatory medicine is simply when a patient takes a much more active role in their care than they have been able to do historically. And I think we're at the place where we kind of take this for granted that patients have all this information, and it's much more of a partnership. But this really upends centuries and centuries of how medicine was carried out. And something we've been maybe slow to wrap our minds around and really articulate is how this switch to participatory medicine really changes the base ethics of healthcare and the values that are helpful to patients and healthcare providers as they're delivering care. When we think of healthcare ethics, we often think of the Hippocratic Oath and this really old set of values, like the value of do no harm. But this old set of ethics was best suited for this bygone era of medicine where patients would passively come to their healthcare providers to do something to them to help fix the problem. But now in this new participatory medicine model, our care is much more relationship-based, it's much more complex, and our ethics and our values need to start shifting to reflect that, which leads us to this paper. So what was the main research question that the authors were looking at? Through a focus group, the researchers wanted to explore how health-related internet information influenced the healthcare provider and patient relationship. Particularly, they wanted to know what new challenges have been created and what values are useful for helping to navigate these challenges. The focus groups that they put together consisted of 14 healthcare providers, including occupational therapists, and 18 patients. All of the patients self-reported a diagnosis of arthritis and at least one other health condition. And to structure these focus groups, the participants were divided into 7 smaller groups who met for around 2 hours and participated in a guided discussion with some of the authors of this research. And the main framework of discussion was based around these 4 questions. First, what type of e-health and devices do you use? Second, what sort of things do you use e-health for? Third, how does e-health influence what you do regarding your health condition? That question was for patients, or practice, which was directed at providers, including your interaction with your patients or providers. And fourth, what do you see as the benefits and drawbacks of e-health? The discussion from these sessions was transcribed, and then the research searched for themes to emerge from the discussion, and then they went back and coded the transcriptions according to these themes that they saw emerging. So what were the results of the study? Both the patients and providers found that health-related internet information prompted more interactive and negotiated communication, as opposed to an older model of care where providers bestowed knowledge on passive patients. But this new model was creating new tensions that the researchers coded according to 3 themes. The first was changing roles. Patients were feeling the need to prepare more beforehand to have productive visits. They felt they needed to understand their situation better and what questions to ask before they even went to their visit so that the visit could be more of an active discussion. And this just felt like a big shift in responsibility to the patient for managing their care more actively. The second theme that the researchers highlight was partnerships. Through the discussion, both patients and providers felt like a healthy patient-provider relationship was much more of a partnership, where trust emerged as a key value. Particularly, this trust was helped by the vulnerability to share when providers would encounter questions that they simply didn't know the answer to. And same would go with sharing from the patients, that the patients were hopefully more forthright in what parts of the treatment simply weren't working for them, whether that was medication or maybe that they just weren't making the progress that they hoped to. And then the third thing was just broadly the tensions and burdens of this new era. The amount of information out there is just so massive. So for both patients and providers, they really felt the burden of sifting through it and verifying it and just all the time that that took. And then also just this dilemma that there are some patients who are really probably really well positioned to take this really active role in their care and devote all this time. But there are some patients who that is very hard for. And are we putting too much responsibility on those patients, or just how do we navigate that discrepancy? So let's turn to what the authors concluded and discussed from this research. I want to qualify this by saying that there was just a ton of really rich, in-depth discussion in this article. And if this topic is interesting to you, I definitely encourage you just to read it in its entirety because I found it a really enjoyable read. But here's my overall summary of the conclusion and discussion. There is just no doubt that the patient and provider relationship is changing. And the authors contended that a relational ethic offers a framework and values to help navigate this complexity. While the term relational ethics sounds complicated, the values that make up this ethics are really familiar to us. And these values include trust, mutuality, responsibility, honesty, and vulnerability. And these were some of the values that the authors just heard in these discussions about this changing relationship. They contend that these values help us build relationships of mutual respect and reciprocity that involve sharing knowledge, providing support, and recognizing vulnerabilities. And all of this leads us to the ultimate goal of shared decision-making and patient-centered care. And that even though these new relationships are really complex, there's a lot of tensions inherent in them, that these age-old values do go a long way in helping us navigate these new relationships. So what were my takeaways for OT practitioners from this research? As always, these are just my own personal musings, and they're really just meant to get your wheels turning. They weren't mentioned specifically in the article. I had two takeaways, and my first is simply that OTs are perfectly positioned to be these much-needed, relationship-focused healthcare providers. When I was reading the values that were talked about in this article that I just mentioned previously, I just kept thinking about how OTs already embody these values. Our profession draws highly emotionally intelligent practitioners, and the research just seems to be telling us again and again how needed this skill set of emotional intelligence is in healthcare today. So no matter where you find yourself in your occupational therapy career, I want you to just know that your skill set is valuable and that you have just an amazing potential to make a difference in the lives of your patients. My second takeaway is that participatory medicine is a concept that we are seeing everywhere in research. It just takes many different forms. Now, participatory medicine is an umbrella term that encapsulates so many of the trends that we are seeing in occupational therapy research. In the club and on the podcast, we've talked about shared decision making. We've talked about children setting their own goals. We've talked about the co-op approach. We've talked about the therapist stepping into more of a coach or consultant role. And to me, all these topics really fit under that umbrella of participatory medicine because they all involve the patient stepping into more of an active partner role in the therapy relationship. And I've been really excited about the evidence we've seen behind all these different approaches. Even though they're all unique and they may initially seem pretty different, they all have this common thread of participatory medicine. So to me, this says that participatory medicine isn't just like a nice concept, a nice idea. It really seems to be an approach that's working in a variety of settings. Now, there is obviously just a lot to unpack with this article, so I really encourage you to read it for yourself in its entirety. And right now, I'm excited to talk to my good friend and rehab technology expert, Lauren Sheehan, about these concepts and how she sees them playing out both on the frontiers of rehab, but also in our day-to-day practices. So without further ado, I'm going to patch Lauren onto our call. Welcome to the podcast, Lauren. Thank you so much for being here today.
Always a pleasure. Excited to chat with you again, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this topic and excited because it feels like it's going to build on what you and I talked about last time you and I talked about self-management of stroke. And this concept of participatory medicine feels like kind of a broader umbrella term for that. And so we'll be able to look at that and talk about it from kind of a wider lens.
I think it's the nice additional component of how the therapist or the healthcare practitioner is involved in the participation or encouragement of self-management. So definitely, I think it's a nice building block to see how the relationship between provider and patient can really foster this participation and self-management concept. Yeah.
So last time when I introduced you, we really focused on your neuro background because we were talking about stroke. And this time I was wondering if you could tell us just a little bit about your background in the technology side of things, because that was really the aspect that made me really excited to talk to you about this topic.
Definitely. So the last 3.5 years or so, I've worked in industry positions. So instead of being in the clinic, I've been on the research and development side, developing technology, doing research related specifically to the technologies that we're developing, and then have really kind of embedded myself in the community of rehabilitation medicine and the intersection between, you know, that area of practice and medicine and to the technology sector. So I've had a chance to participate in a lot of really great forums and conferences and in organizations that have the same mission of fostering rehabilitation through the lens of technology and seeing how technology can help foster our interventions, improve our patient outcomes. So it's definitely a passion of mine. And I do have a little bit of background on e-health as well. So looking forward to just creating some more context around what some of these things mean for the audience.
Every time I hear about your background, I just want to ask you a ton of questions about it. But there's a lot in this article, and I really wanted to start by focusing on this e-health component that you just mentioned. The article came out in 2015. So in some ways, the concept of e-health that they were talking about almost feels a little dated. So much has happened in the past 5 years. So I was wondering if you could start us off by just, again, reorienting us to this concept of e-health. Even as I'm reading it, I'm still having troubles knowing what the boundaries of it are like. And also just give us kind of an update of what's happening in e-health that you think that occupational therapists who are working should know about.
Definitely. Yeah, 2015, I would say, was on the earlier end of the sort of e-health, digital health movement. A lot has changed definitely in those 5 years. Just to take a little bit of a broader perspective for a second, you know, when we're looking at technology and its intersection in care, the things that technology, you know, should do or is sort of devised to do, and I think e-health is really in this category as well, is to empower, enable, and encourage patients. There was an article that I read on e-health, and it gave 10 E's of e-health. And those three things, among others, were listed. So e-health, I think, you know, as well as just technology in general, should be used to put the power in the hands of the patients. Now, that can be, in this case, as partners in their care. That can be as an adjunct, perhaps, to their therapy. The technologies that I've worked on over the years are technologies that stroke patients can use at home to continue their care and in some ways supplement the system that doesn't always serve them to the maximum, you know, capacity. They don't get as much outpatient time as they could or should in order to maximize their benefits. So technology kind of enables them to take their therapy into their own hands, do some additional, you know, high intensity work outside of the therapy realm. When we're talking about e-health specifically, it really has a digital component. I think that's kind of the easiest way to think about it. And I stole the World Health Organization definition. I think with something like this, the more definitions we look at, the more we can kind of digest the concept. So the World Health Organization looks at e-health as the use of information and communication technologies for health. So super broad. I think it'll help to give a couple of examples in order to give context. But the World Health Organization goes on to say that e-health is about improving the flow of information through electronic means to support the delivery of health services and the management of health systems. So it's beyond the communication between provider and patient, although that's, I think, really what this article focuses on. In terms of how e-health is used, you know, e-health can go as far as being a system or a product that a health system or insurance company uses to help motivate, track, empower healthcare data. And a lot of e-health and digital health is about data, data exchange, information exchange. There's so much that we have access to now in this digital world. You know, there's information that both patients and providers can get their hands on that they've not ever had access to before. So I think it's an exciting time. I think occupational therapy definitely can play a role in both developing the technology, and that's always my soapbox. We need to be at the table, right, to make sure that these technologies are developed in a way that best serve patients. And also that, you know, that we can use these technologies on the provider side to empower patients to get important information about their care so that we can better care plan with them as partners.
Today, where I want to take that is how all of this technology that's coming out, how this is going to be basically completely changing the patient therapist relationship, which is where this concept of participatory medicine comes in. I've just been really excited about learning about the concept of participatory medicine because once I learned it, I feel like I see it everywhere. Like I see it in everything that I'm reading about therapy, that there's all these recommendations for the patient to be more of an active partner. But even in my own healthcare, I'm seeing examples of how this new technology and communication streams are changing my interactions with my healthcare provider. I guess just as a quick example, I was worried about my iron levels a couple weeks ago and I got my blood work done. And usually you like wait for your doctor to call you, but I got a notification on my phone from my Apple Health app that my lab results were in, and I read all of them. It showed me what was outside of the norms. I researched them. And then like 12 hours, my doctor calls, and I have a ton of questions for her. And that's a totally different interaction than if she had just been calling me to tell me my results. Like it puts her on her toes a lot more where I'm asking her things versus she's just telling me things. That encapsulates how so many of our interactions are going to be changing. But yeah, so I guess my question for you is this participatory medicine, is this as seismic of a change as I think it is? Are you seeing it everywhere? Do you think this is the future of healthcare?
I think it definitely is the future of healthcare. I think that's an awesome example. You know, and one of the pieces of the article really spoke to patients feeling like they had both a responsibility to be prepared with some of that information, as well as, you know, allowing their interaction with their physician to be just more robust and have more context when they had that information. And I definitely have seen that, you know, in my neuro practice. And I think, you know, this is actually an interesting example. Oftentimes I was hearing about new technologies from my patients. And when I first, you know, left clinical practice to move to industry, it was because a patient had introduced me to a device, which introduced me to the company. So, you know, the fact that patients and their caregivers are out there doing research on their own, finding information. We did a bit of some surveying with patients lately, individuals who had had strokes, and something like 30% of what they were doing at home now, you know, sometimes years after their event when they're no longer in therapy, was based on what they were finding online, exercises, activities. You know, so there's definitely a different information exchange. And sometimes that can be really wonderful, and most often it is. And sometimes we have to, and I think this is where our duty as OTs comes in, is to really help prepare patients. They will continue to look for information far after, you know, our relationship with them perhaps has sort of ended and they move on outside of our care. And so helping them to become savvy consumers of information, you know, where do you find exercises related to stroke? Maybe it's on these sites, but maybe you don't want to go to, you know, YouTube and just go to someone who might not have a background or credentials. So I think one of the things that we can do as we empower our patients is really to help them understand where to look for that information and really help them become savvy consumers, because information is everywhere and it's not all created equal.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that's one piece. But I think, you know, as the tides and kind of our relationship with patients shifts around this idea of them being able to come prepared and come with ideas and add their ideas to interventions, we really as OT practitioners can and should play into that. You know, what is our expectation of patients when it comes to participating in their own care? And sometimes we might need to guide or direct that a little bit, but let's make it a piece of homework. You know, maybe we're getting stuck in our outpatient sessions, and I'm working with someone who has a brain injury. Maybe that's a piece of homework that they can do to look at other options or interventions or technologies and bring those back to the session in order to have continued conversation. I think it really requires us to see ourselves in a little bit of a different light as guides, as coaches. We've talked a lot about this, you and I. You know, we need to be partners, because this information and kind of plethora of digital health and e-health isn't going away. And so we really do need to shift in order to support patients to really have the information to participate in their own care decisions.
Yeah, and I see OTs as really well poised to make that shift. And I'm really excited for our profession, because to me, this more of a partnership is, that's our ideal anyway. That's what we signed up to be OTs to do. And I think sometimes we get in our systems and we kind of lose that part of ourselves. So it's fun to see in this future, we're going to be called to lean into that more. And it's going to take a lot of emotional intelligence to navigate these new kind of interactions with our patients. But I think that that is a huge strength of OTs, and maybe one that is currently underutilized, that we're not getting to use as much as we will or as we possibly could. And it's fun to see a future where we're really able to lean into that partnership, which is what we wanted to be doing in the first place.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think, you know, we need to understand what's important to the patients in order to design interventions that are meaningful, occupation-based, you know, and so if this health information is meaningful to the patient that we're working with, that's a big component of how we can incorporate them and their priorities into our care. So I completely agree with you. I think sometimes we've gotten swayed by the medical model, and participatory medicine is different than traditional sort of expert-patient relationship. And so I am excited as well to see hopefully OT at the forefront of this movement.
Yeah. Do you think the medical model has kind of been the biggest barrier to OTs really leaning into this participatory medicine mindset? I think we're such an interesting profession because we're not fully in the medical model. We've always kind of been in this participatory medicine area, but lots of us work in that medical model setting. Yeah, what do you think has kept us from fully realizing our role as basically experts in participatory medicine?
I do think that some of it is these systems. I think sometimes when it comes to documentation, we have an easier time documenting what's tangible versus this idea of, you know, how do you set a goal around a patient doing their own research related to their health management. One of the things I was really excited to see actually is that the OT practice framework, the fourth edition that just came out, has health management as one of the occupations that is now listed. So I think we're getting to a point where we're adding language to sort of our lexicon of how we speak about care. And so I think that has been one of our challenges is just, it's easier to say that someone needs minimal assistance, you know, physically than that they need guidance and support or cueing to manage their health information or manage their medical questions for their physician. Or I think part of it is really getting comfortable with some of those softer skills that we have and the coaching model that walks patients through some of those interventions that are just a little bit less tangible.
It's almost like the theory that we're taught in OT is all about participatory medicine, but then like the documentation that we're taught is fully in the medical model, because I think we think that's what insurance companies want to see or doctors want to see. And as I'm sitting here, I'm questioning, I'm like, is that even what they really want to see? Or am I like projecting that on them? Like, do you think there's more leeway in our documentation to be talking about more of these participatory medicine and active participation things versus like min, mod, max, ADL stuff all the time?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's just getting comfortable with the language. We'll provide a documentation example related to participatory care. I think the more we see it, the more we can kind of digest how to talk about it and get comfortable with language that is a little bit less about the, you know, exact intervention and the amount of assistance that someone needed versus this idea of coaching. Co-op is a great example of that. You know, we're seeing more of these models, I think, really enter the OT realm. I think it's a great feather in our cap that we have more language, even in our practice framework, to talk about how medical management is an occupation that we are positioned to support patients in. So I think all of that really does provide us with some additional, you know, support to say that, yes, this is our role, and hopefully some additional language to know how to speak about it in really clear terms and to, you know, let insurance companies know through our notes that, you know, if a patient leaves my care and they have the ability to navigate the healthcare system in a way that they feel more empowered, that they have you know, less trepidation about speaking with their healthcare provider, that they've gotten used to, even if it's just in our care scenario of this partnership, that's a really big win for their ability, you know, long-term to navigate their own health and manage their healthcare. I think that's such a huge takeaway. So I think as long as we can continue to make that case and make an argument for it, we definitely, you know, belong at the table. And I think we're the perfect people to both allow patients to kind of test that relationship out and then also really encourage them to take that participatory approach in other care scenarios.
As I'm thinking about this too, like one of the barriers that I would have said historically to the patients being more active participants is historically the patients did come in to see a healthcare provider and thought of them as an expert, like just tell me what to do, give me the answers. But even for myself, when I go to see a healthcare provider now, I'm expecting to be part of the conversation. Like I've done tons of research and yeah, I'm just expecting it to be more of a conversation. And I think we're going to be seeing more and more patients' expectations changing. So patients' expectations are changing. Our technology is changing. The science that we're learning about how people heal is changing. It just does seem like all things are pointing in this direction of this new line of care, which is just totally different than what we've done historically to really have that partnership.
I think OTs have always led the way. It's nice to have some language to talk about it. And I know, you know, the Participatory Society for Participatory Medicine, which I didn't know existed until, you know, the first time the podcast came out and the club was talking about the article. So, you know, it's exciting that there are whole groups of folks that are really focused on making sure that this continues to be a focus of healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it opens up a lot more partnerships to me for OTs, where it feels like these other groups are really recognizing the value of what we're doing and helping us in some ways to have this new shared language that we can use. I think historically, we've kind of been in our own OT bubble, and we get used to using our own language that doesn't really invite people in. But just like last time on the podcast, where we talked about self-management, like that's some language we can be using to describe what OT does. And participatory medicine is something that we can be using to get more healthcare providers on board with what we're doing and just explain what we're doing. It's a really exciting time, I think, for us. So this is like big picture, heady things to take in. My mind's like still kind of spinning. I'm still like thinking about all the e-health changes that are coming. But I'm curious to hear from you, after reading this article, after thinking about all these concepts, if you were to walk into a session later today, what are a couple things that you would do differently with this new mindset of participatory medicine?
One of the things that we'll be sharing with listeners that I just have really gotten excited about is from the Society for Participatory Medicine, there is a manifesto, and it's really positioned as almost a contract. And in my outpatient practice, you know, I think while we're seeing this shift where more patients are taking that responsibility to do, you know, investigation on their own, bring their ideas, participate in their care, that's definitely still not everyone. And I think it depends on a lot of different factors, some of which may still be generational, right? So this shift is happening in healthcare, but it hasn't been this way for an extremely long time. And we still have some older individuals who are used to this expert model where they come in to sort of, you know, be fixed or get the information that will help them hopefully meet their goals. And sometimes I've found in outpatient care that patients don't necessarily have the same understanding about what their responsibility is in that grand scheme of care. You know, we can provide information and support them and guide them, but there's work to be done on their end. And so I think what I would do differently is really use this manifesto as almost a contractual conversation on the front end of care, just to get some of that language, you know, expressed between myself and my patient, and at least let them know what I plan to bring to the table and what I expect that they will also contribute as a part of their care. I wonder if maybe we could even just talk through that a little bit and kind of give some of the examples of what that manifesto includes. And again, I'm really excited. You did all the heavy lifting on this, but we've partnered with the Society for Participatory Medicine to be able to change this manifesto and include the language of occupational therapy professional. So it's ready to go as sort of that takeaway that you can put on your clipboard and use some of the language there with patients to describe this relationship of participatory medicine and participation in care.
Yeah, you and I are really lucky because we're looking at this manifesto right now. And I know most people are just listening over the podcast and don't have it in front of them. But just so our listeners know, you can either go to the Society for Participatory Medicine and search manifesto, and you'll see their page where they describe it and you can download it there. Or you will be able to go to the OT Potential website and search OT and Participatory Medicine Manifesto, and you'll be able to download this manifesto that has the OT specific language on it. Since people don't have it in front of them right now, do you want to just read through it together? Like you said, it's set up with a contract, so it says what the therapy professional commits to doing and then what the patient or caregiver commits to doing. Do you want to read the OT professional part?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll hit some highlights. I won't read all of them, but I'll read the ones that are kind of most stand out to me.
Yeah.
That I would use in explaining how I plan to show up in this participatory way. So as an occupational therapy professional, I really like this one, acknowledge that my patients are the experts on their own life, body, and mind. And that's under share and listen.
I feel like we could talk the whole time just about that. Or that makes me like feel a shift as a OT professional to think that way or to say that so explicitly.
And I really think that that is the power of something like this, is the very explicit and sort of, you know, specific plans for how this care relationship will play out. Under respect one another, the one that I thought was most important was encourage my patients to be honest by being respectful and non-judgmental, right? If something's not working for them, they need to let me know. If they, you know, prefer a different style or if an intervention wasn't their favorite, let's talk about it. Share information responsibly. Help my patients access and understand the information they need to engage in their care. And that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier, you know, deciphering what information is most important or what types of information are maybe more reputable than others. Mm-hmm. Promote curiosity, which I love. Encourage my patients to do their own research and become involved in health communities. Be a team builder. The one that I thought was most relevant was treat my patients and their caregivers like partners, peers, and collaborators.
Yeah, just all those things, just reading them, yeah, makes me shift my self-perception just a little bit. And none of it feels like new or foreign, but feels like roles that I've honestly never fully stepped into as a OT professional, like, because it is different than the medical model that lots of us work in. So for the patient side, there's like 10 bullet points, and like Lauren did, I'll just highlight some of them. So the manifesto says, as a patient or caregiver, I will be prepared to share my story, experiences completely, accurately, and honestly. I'll ask questions of occupational therapy professionals and voice my concerns. Even that, I feel like I haven't, as an OT, created enough space for my patients to ask questions. And then the other one that stood out to me was be truthful with occupational therapy professionals, even when it's uncomfortable. And that made me think about how lots of times in our current settings, sometimes our patients aren't set up to be truthful. Like, they're set up to be like, oh yeah, I'm doing my home exercise program. Like,
exactly.
They want to say what they know we want to hear and are maybe afraid to be like, that's not working for me, or I didn't do that. just because of the power dynamic and the expectation of a medical interaction, we haven't made it safe to do that. And I've done that with my own doctor's appointments. I've like downplayed how much coffee I had or like caffeine I've been having or something, because you want to please your doctor or therapist. To say these things explicitly, I think, is really powerful. So would you want to role play how you would introduce this in a therapy session?
Sure. So I would probably introduce it, you know, early on in a care scenario, perhaps, you know, after completing an evaluation. I might say something like, you know, Sarah, it was really nice to see you today and really looking forward to working with you. I just want to let you know that my style is a little bit different than maybe some other providers that you've worked with. And I just wanted to walk you through my expectations of myself related to your care and also what I would hope that you would bring to our care relationship as well. So I would probably, you know, have the manifesto available and talk that through with you, that, you know, this is a place where I really want you to share, and I want to know and understand your story. And I hope that on the other side that you can ask any questions of me that are important or that you have concerns about. I really want this to be a place where you can be honest with me about what's working, about what's not working. And on the other side, I want to encourage you to gather your own information that you can bring to our sessions so that we can talk through maybe some things that you're finding and some information that you have collected. At the same time, you know, I really want to make sure that you understand the types of information that might be helpful out there, and that in order to provide you with the best care, I need to understand as much about, you know, your situation and scenario as you're willing to share with me. I hope that we can both be curious and honest with each other about our interactions, and that you are, you know, a partner, and I'm here to collaborate with you as a coach and a therapist, but really do both encourage and support you taking an active role to bring what you want to change and just make sure that this is an open conversation so that we're moving you towards the best outcomes possible.
So if I'm the patient, I could see asking, so I've been in therapy before and they told me what to do and I didn't do it and they didn't listen to why it wasn't working and nothing changed. How is what we're going to do today going to be different than that?
Yeah, I have this conversation up front so that hopefully you feel comfortable to be able to let me know what's not working. You know, a lot happens outside of our time together. And so in order to really best support you, I both need to know what you are feeling good about in terms of our interventions and interactions and where we're missing the boat. You know, you are the expert on yourself. And so some things I suggest may really hit the mark and some things will not. And I need to know from you what's working in order to allow us to partner and make changes. So just a little bit of a different approach that hopefully we can get on board with together.
I have a big binder of all the stuff that I've collected related to my condition. Do you want me to bring that in to the next session?
That would be great. What is included in that binder?
Well, I've been printing, whenever I read an article related to my condition, I print it off. And then I'm also in some different communities where there's conversations where I feel like people are experiencing the same things that I'm going through, and I've printed those off. And then I also try to collect to keep my notes when I go to different sessions, because I I feel like they're scattered everywhere and I really wanted them in one place. So this has gotten to be a pretty big binder that honestly, I'm overwhelmed by it myself. Like, and I'm having troubles knowing what's helpful and knowing what people want to see and what I should be communicating to my doctor even about it.
That would be great, Sarah. Go ahead and bring it in and maybe we can use part of our session to even just organize it in a way that is going to serve you best so that you have everything in one place, but you can more easily kind of digest the important things and keep your notes in a place that you can have readily available for your other provider sessions.
I have one more question because I ask more questions than the average patient. I've seen on this manifesto that it says caregivers too. And I was kind of wondering if next time my husband can join because he's so involved in my care. Are you okay if I bring other people to our sessions? I'd love to have him here to help me think through things and fill in gaps that I'm missing.
Absolutely. I think him being here to organize your binder would be great because he's probably at some of those appointments with you. So understanding a system that works for both of you sounds like a really good plan.
I'm starting to giggle to myself, Lauren, because I truly have like some binders from times when I haven't felt well. So, and I bet lots of patients do. So,
yeah. And what a great OT activity, you know, to encourage and promote organization and sort of streamlining that information to make it work for the patient. Yeah. I think that's a great, great OT task. Yeah. And again, health management is now a part of the OT practice framework. So if we felt any trepidation, you know, not to include that as part of our patient's occupational profile or wondering if we have a place there, we definitely do.
Are there settings that you feel like this manifesto lends itself to?
You know, I think the language can really be used in a variety of different care settings. So even if it's just to say, you know, maybe I'm working on acute and I say, yeah, I'm here to see you today, Joe. And I understand that, you know, maybe the scenario is that you're working with someone who has cancer and like just the acknowledgement that someone has agency over their body and knows themselves best. And I'm here to partner and support you and see how we can work together. I mean, I think some of that language is really powerful, even if we don't, you know, lay out the whole manifesto. Promoting curiosity, I think that that is, that has a place, you know, anywhere and everywhere, and being a team builder or a team player. So I think we can use the language. I think maybe in its kind of full contractual form, I see the manifesto really being a nice kind of takeaway or handout for an outpatient setting where we have long-term relationships with patients. They're at a place now where they're kind of back at home and they're trying to get back into routines and health management and self-management is a part of that return home, return to community. So I think it definitely has a strong place in the outpatient setting.
Good. So there is, I mean, honestly, I just want to keep talking about this topic because it's so big and so important to me. But we're coming to the end of our time. And I was wondering from you, what are the one or two things that you really want therapists to take away from this conversation and from this research and carry forward with them?
I think that the biggest things, I think it can be really difficult, especially as an early practitioner. You mentioned emotional intelligence. And I think when we're early on in our careers, especially, we want to feel like we have a command of the subject matter and that we, you know, are kind of developing our expertise. And I think that I would really encourage early practitioners to lean into some of the discomfort and kind of transparency that's required to have some of these conversations and know that you don't have to be the expert. I mean, some of this participatory medicine conceptually is that you are a partner, you bring your expertise, whatever that is, and your patient brings expertise about themselves. And so it kind of takes some of the burden off of us needing to know everything about everything at all times. But it does definitely take some emotional intelligence and some transparency that I think can be difficult for early career therapists. So my encouragement would just be to lean into that really at all stages of, of your career journey. The other thing that I would really encourage, because there's so much out there related to e-health, is to encourage therapists to take opportunities to investigate some of these e-health, whether it's apps or platforms like we talked about, investigate some of the technologies that are available, maybe with your patients as part of your session, to see if there is a component like an app that might help them better manage their care, and kind of lean into the technology as well. There is a lot that continues to evolve from a digital health perspective. And at the end of the day, the data is to empower patients to take ownership of their care. And in some cases, for us to help monitor some of that information that might really provide us with the information to best support and change their plan of care as we get new information. So don't be afraid of the technology. Be open to your patients bringing you ideas of new technologies, because that happens often, and do some investigation with your patients to find apps and sites and digital health that might really be a good fit to best support their care.
Well, Lauren, you've made me feel empowered as a clinician today and really excited about the future of our profession and of my just own personal career. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to hopefully some future conversations on this.
Yes, very much. And thank you for having me. I'm excited for the future of OT and that we can lead the way in participatory care, because it's really where we come from. So excited to get feedback about the podcast, and really enjoyed our conversation today.
Okay, that is all that we have for you today. Hopefully you now have a better understanding of e-health and of participatory medicine, and feel like you have some new tools to apply these concepts to your day-to-day practice. If you are interested in earning a continuing education certificate for your time today, what you are going to do next is to head to otpotential.com and either sign in or sign up for the OT Potential Club. The OT Potential Club is our OT evidence-based practice platform. We have already reviewed almost 100 research articles for you, so you can search influential OT evidence on all kinds of topics and around different diagnoses. But once you are there, you are going to want to search for the eHealth and Participatory Medicine course, or click on the button that says CEU Courses. From there, you will be prompted to take a 5-question test, and if you earn 75% or higher, you will have a certificate sent to your email. Right now, the cost to join is $39 per year, but on October 1st, 2020, we are going to be raising that price to $49 per year, because our plan is to keep adding new CEU courses monthly. If you have any questions about this process or feedback on this course, please leave us a review, or if you have an immediate need, you can chat with us on our website, which again is otpotential.com. Okay, thank you so much for joining us today for our second hour-long episode. I hope this podcast helps you broaden your knowledge and tweak your practice and stay evidence-based. Take care, and we'll talk to you next month.